Hey, it's Don Coscarelli, filmmaker. I just wrote a book. Check it out. It's called Fiction, Tales from the World of Phantasm. And it can teach you all the things that you never knew about the Phantasm film series. A lot of interesting stuff. Horror, violence, not much sex. Check it out. Now available on Amazon, paperback, and Kindle.
This is The Gala Show. I'm your reporter on the beat, Gala Avery. On this episode, you may know my guest as the two-time Edgar-nominated author, or perhaps the man who has lent his words to best-selling comics such as Deadpool, Punisher Max, and Godzilla. Or maybe you've read his latest short story, Lush, which is currently being adapted into a feature by the director of John Wick. But here on The Gala Show, I know him as one of the OG fans and supporters of the Video Archives podcast, Dwayne Swierczynski. Hi, Dwayne.
Hey, Gala. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm really happy that you are here. Actually, we are in your office.
We are. My weird little private eye lair.
I love it. Especially this building. It's just gorgeous. So I was really happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here. I mean, it's the old Chamber of Commerce building. I think I found a picture from 1906 of this place.
And really?
It looks the same.
No, it's outside. Were you in the photograph?
I'm not that old, Gala. I'm old. I'm not quite that old.
Like Shining style?
Exactly.
Before we bring up the topic for today, I have a question for you. Okay, so I was going to ask about your paperback collection because you have quite an extensive, I think, pulp collection.
Yeah.
And like, which one was your favorite? But I was actually more curious, what was the book that you picked up as a child that made you say, hey, I really want to be a writer. I can do this.
Oh, it's a great question. And it's funny, I was just talking about this yesterday. I was 14 and I read a review in my local paper about a novel called It by Stephen King. It was like this sort of this mammoth 1,000-page.
Yeah, not sure if anyone's heard of that novel.
I'm pretty sure it's pretty well known. But it was described as a monster mash of all these great, every monster ever. It was like everything, you know, in the world. I had to read this book. So I went to the free library because I, you know, was a kid, I was broke, had no money. And I had it. I was so happy they had it. I dragged it home. And that was my life for the next like 2 weeks. I read nonstop. And I was like, it wasn't so much that I thought, oh, I can do this. It's more like, I want to do this. I want to pull someone in and like just, you know, give them a whole world, give them like, you know, make them laugh and like it's shocked. And I just love the turns of imagination. So that was like really a turning point. And I started writing not long after that, just for fun and to amuse high school friends, you know.
Is that still like your favorite Stephen King novel?
No, but it's the one that I think looms large for me. I kind of like his, leaner, meaner, weird ones, you know. I mean, I think he's a brilliant guy, you know. It's funny, from horror, I found crime through horror because it's sort of mostly a gateway drug. Mm-hmm. There's a writer named Joe Lansdale who wrote horror stuff I knew. Then he wrote a book called Cold in July, which was sort of a, you know, kind of a down and dirty, you know, Texas crime novel. I'm like, wow, okay, wow, I want to do this now. It's sort of, I get excited by, you know, writers I encountered when I was younger.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love it. Now, as always, my guest gets to bring their topic to the mic. Dwayne, why don't you tell us what your topic is and why you decided to choose it?
Great question. When you asked me, I thought, what am I care deeply about? And one thing I'm really into is place. In terms of like, of course, you know, film locations, in terms of locations in novels, but more especially where writers do their work. Like where writers work or they live or they party or they die, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, ever since I was coming out to LA, long before I moved here, I would take little, maybe family vacations, and I would take little trips and look for, you know, James Cain's former house. Or like, where did Raymond Chandler live? Much to the non-delight of my children, by the way, but make pit stops.
How old were they at that?
Oh, they're like, you know, 5 and 6.
And they didn't know any better back then.
Right. You know, exactly. So, I mean, I read a writer biography. I write down a list of like where they lived. And I was thinking about it. To me, it struck me as like, place is almost like, without a time machine, it's the closest thing we have to touching the past. Because you can go to that location where something happened. For instance, McMusso and Frank. I mean, I love that it was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood because there are about a billion writers who have sat at that bar and rubbed elbows in that same bar where we see, you know, Cliff Booth and Rick Dalton. It's like kind of, it's history right there.
It's history on the screen, yeah.
On screen, yeah.
And then you can actually go there.
You actually can go there, right. And coming to me, it's like you almost touch the bar top and feel the atoms transferring, right? I mean, that sounds weird, but it's like, I love place, you know, for that reason. So, and now it's time for a commercial break.
be vegetarian, but that doesn't mean I can't enjoy a good spice rub. My favorite place to get them is Smoked Bros, a veteran-owned and operated business that sells premium handcrafted dry rubs, spice blends, and seasonings. Psst, guys, you can even put it on your popcorn. My favorites are Honey Badger, because he doesn't give a bleep, and jelly and peanut flavor topping, because some things just taste better together. The website even has recipes, so go check out smokedbros.com to support a veteran-owned and operated business and fill your cabinet with delicious flavor.
And we're back. So we're about place.
Yeah. You heard it here. We are going to be talking about writers in the LA places where they've lived, worked, and died.
Yes.
30 minutes on the clock, and our time starts now.
Oh, wow. I know.
30 minutes.
You hardcore.
Go. I know, right? So you're not from LA originally.
I'm not.
So were these places something that like drew you to Los Angeles? Like the kind of magic of like, hey, this guy wrote here. Or, hey, this guy lived here.
Absolutely. I mean, LA is the perfect place for this sort of weird hobby of mine, because at some point, most writers end up here either by at gunpoint or about if I, you know, their career, they want to, you know, break into film or TV. It's just a lot of writers wash up here, almost New York too. New York's known as a haven for writers.
Yeah, but less so than LA.
Less than LA. Yeah, I mean, that's, everyone takes their time in the sun, as they call it, you know? So yeah. And going back to like, you know, Fitzgerald and Faulkner, I mean, writers have been coming here for decades. So when I have actually my origin story for my place fixation was, mm-hmm. I was my first book tour. I did a signing in Westwood at a bookshop, mystery bookshop, and a fellow writer, Michael Connelly, best-selling author, he's the kindest guy in the world, he said, hey, crash at my place.
Wow.
Turns out his place is his writing office. It's the Elliot Gould place in The Long Goodbye.
Oh my God, of
it's
course.
It's Philip Marlowe's, you know, Hightower Drive apartment. So at the time, I had not seen Long Goodbye, much to my embarrassment, because people said, no, don't see it, it's not Chandler. I love the movie, but anyway, Mike says, you know, go crash there. So I did. I landed late. I had jet lagged. I was jet lagged to hell. I got up next morning in the bed. A cat walked by.
Oh my! I was going to ask if there was a cat.
There was. I followed the cat into the kitchen, looked for like my Diet Coke.
Oh my God, you literally had the moment.
And then, I'm not kidding, after that, I put the DVD, because I was up like 5 in the morning, I put the DVD in and watched my last 5 minutes of what I just did. Like, guy gets up out of bed, follows a cat. I mean, it was surreal. It was like, my God, I love this. So being in a place where a movie was shot, let alone, and then a writer who I greatly admire wrote quite a few novels. It was like, that was like, yeah, energy overload. So
it's funny. I find that like a lot of horror fans tend to pilgrim to these places. Like, oh, the house that like Halloween was filmed at, or like this house or that house. Yeah. But like, was there like one specific place in LA that besides, I guess, the Philip Marlowe house that you stayed in, I guess the Long Goodbye house.
But that was great. But also, one thing I really was excited about was, and we moved to Burbank when we first moved here. And just up the hill was the house, the little rented house where James M. Cain wrote The Postman Always Rings Twice, which Cain is a longtime favorite. I mean, reading his biography, like he just sort of, you know, cranked that out. and I walked by it often on walks around the neighborhood. So that was amazing.
Do you ever go to places that you've heard that other people have written and go right there to like try to get like the same?
That's what I do.
There's like a magic. I feel like people either feel it or you don't, but I feel it when I go places that like something great has been written or worked on, and like you can kind of touch the magic. Like you were saying, like it's the closest thing to time travel that we have.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember choosing a certain lunchbox and that Warren Zevon had gone there often and like, you know, hung out there. I'm like, I gotta go there and just, you know, absorb that. Musso and Frank for sure, you know, Bordner's, any kind of public place. Well, when I heard that, you know, that your dad and Quentin wrote parts of Pulp Fiction at Barney's Beanery in West Hollywood, I was like, I'm there. Like, to me, it's like two things. It's that and Body Double. Because that's where, you know, the guy from Body Double, you know, drowns his sorrows after Barbara Crampton dumps his ass. So that was like, I had to go there. Like, to me, whenever I had a chance to go to Barney's Beanery, I go there to write. Then in a notebook, this right here, I have a notebook I use, yeah.
Do you have, like, specific places that you go when you want, like, a specific feeling? Like, oh, I really want to write, like, crime. I really want to write horror. I really want to write something sad or something happy. Like, do you have, like, different places that you go for that?
Mood-based? Not really. To me, it's like, writing is writing, and often a lot of these emotions you're talking about are sort of subgenres come up naturally.
Yeah.
So like I go through the gamut. I'm more just looking for a place that has vibe, where I can like see not be bothered too much. Like I don't want to be like, not important. That bother me, but it's like I want to be quiet.
I understand, because the big joke is that I go and listen to all the Video Archives podcast episodes at this local boba cafe in my like very small little neighborhood. And they know, like, if I have my headphones on, don't bother me.
Right.
But I put my headphones sometimes on and I don't actually have anything playing just because I don't want people to bother me.
Exactly.
That's and they the best know, thing. Like, don't come and sit with me. Don't come and talk to me. So yeah, you definitely need a place that has like a vibe to like sit down and work and write.
Oh, completely. Vibe is big for me. You know, it's even like, when people ask why LA, because some people hate LA. I don't know why. I love this town.
But anyone who hates LA can get out of here.
Exactly.
Scram.
Just go home then. Go home to Sheboygan. So anyway, it's like, I mean, I love it here. And it's the energy. Same thing in New York. I lived in New York for 2 years. And there actually is an energy. You can feel it. Like, it's different. It's intense. It's a young person's energy. I think it would kill me now. LA is just more like, you know, I don't know. It's just a place where dreams are like either for good or bad. Live or die, and it's kind of exciting.
You chase it.
Oh man.
Well, also what I love about LA, because like, I mean, I can talk about LA for hours. It's my city. It's like I was born in Santa Monica.
Oh wow.
I will live here and I will die here. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot take me out of here.
I
will be kicking and screaming. You can drag me. But what I love also is that there's so many different vibes. There's so many different feelings around the city. Like, each neighborhood has like a very different feeling. Like, here we are in Pasadena. This is technically Pasadena.
Oh, it's old Pasadena.
Yeah, we're in old Pasadena. And old Pasadena has a very specific vibe. Like, all the buildings are low. You can see the sky. It's so much different than downtown where everything's like a skyscraper. And like, when you're in with all the people.
Yeah.
And so I guess like also just like the part of the city you're in.
Absolutely. They haven't ruined it yet. I mean, it's funny.
I hope not. Knock on wood.
A buddy of mine who actually knew this old Pasadena, like in the early 90s even, said, you have no idea how different it was. It was like pretty, you know, sketchy. Now it's like, it's gorgeous. I mean,
it's like,
me,
I would
love
say
it.
Pasadena is like the cleanest, safest place in LA. So it's funny to hear that it was sketchy in the early 90s.
Kind of weird. Yeah. And I've heard stories though. Yeah. It was pretty rough, you know, and it's, Pasadena too is a cool, I don't know, it's a cool mix of people and all kinds of weirdos, you know, which I like.
Do you have a favorite like LA author or author that's written something in LA?
Oh, geez. Don't get me started. I have a
ton. Oh, no. Get started. Get started.
I have a ton. I mean, it's funny to me. So native born LA author or like any kind of thing? Because I think of like John Fante is like a great, you know, Ask the Dust. Like he's like classic. Oh, he wasn't born here. He came from, I think, Colorado. But like, so people, I think, adopt this town. It's hard to find a native born.
I'm a native born. Like every now and then you find someone that's like from here. And it's so funny. I was just talking to Mick Garris, and he and I not only we share a birthday.
Oh,
not
really?
The same year, obviously. We share a birthday.
I knew Mick's youthful, but I didn't think that youthful.
But we also share a hospital.
Wow.
So we're born in the same hospital on the same day, which is really
weird.
When
is your birthday, if I can ask?
December 4th.
Oh, very
1995.
Cool. Oh!
Right. That's how I feel when someone tells me they're born in 2002. I'm like, the old lady is setting in.
It's like I'm turning to dust and like my dashes float into the atrium here.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's interesting to find. So like there are people that they do adopt the city, and I feel like I truly feel like someone can move here and just become an Angeleno.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's completely different than, like, being from California or whatever. Like, you become an Angeleno.
I think you're right. Exactly.
We have our own culture.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
I will fight this tooth and nail.
Totally.
Los Angeles culture, you are an Angeleno, and you can become one. You have to just adopt it.
Yeah. Also, have you heard this? I'm sure you've heard this. Like, LA has no history. What's your take on that?
Oh, I disagree completely. Right. What are you talking about? LA has no history. LA's history is on the big screen.
Yes,
like
exactly.
everyone goes to the movies to see LA's history, basically.
Yes.
Like every single day that like something amazing is made here or something amazing is written here, it is history. And like just like you're saying, when you go to a place like Barney's Beanery, you can go sit at that table. Like maybe that person sat in and they wrote that great thing. Or you can go to Toy.
Absolutely.
You can sit at, there's a Pulp Fiction table. Quentin signed the poster. And so you can go and sit at the Pulp Fiction table. And like, there's some LA history right there.
Yeah.
Because like, that's a thing. And maybe it's not like the history in like Europe.
No. I mean, a Scottish friend jokes, he came to Philadelphia years ago and said, here's Independence Hall. Here's all of our historic. He's like, history. This is new construction. I'm like, so it's like, but LA, it is history if you consider 20th century important. And it is. It's vitally important.
Every day is history.
Yeah.
It's like we are living history right now. That's the most amazing part of it. And to say the same people might say like, well, I guess New York is like around like a little bit longer than LA.
Sure.
By smidgens.
It is.
But like, New York has its history. LA has its history. Miami has its history. I don't know.
Totally.
Winnipeg has its history. I mean, I could.
Every place
city
does.
Every place has. It might not be bullet holes in the old buildings, it's on the Walk of Fame. It's everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned, it's funny, seeing LA in movies. Like, I have a almost a fetish for LA 70s hang movies. Behind you is a poster of Cisco Pike, Gene Hackman, Chris Christopherson.
What a great poster. The pink, black, white, and blue. I love
that poster, but it's also like a great hang film. It's a crime film. It's about, you know, Gene Hackman's character tries to force Christopherson into like moving pot over again. But that's minor. It's like mostly you're touring West LA. You're touring oh my God, it's an amazing movie.
So for people that aren't familiar, what is a hang film?
Oh, okay. For me, this is my own personal term. I'm not sure if anyone else uses it, but it's like you're hanging out with a cool cast of characters.
That's
great,
yeah.
You're just like model shop. Model shop's a hang film. Like it's like you're hanging out with on his little mission. There's something happening, but I don't care. I'm going to see the streets back then.
Yeah.
I want to see what people do, how they behave, what they smoke, what they eat.
That's actually why I love Roger Corman, AIP films. Yes. Because it is so LA history. It's not a Roger Corman, obviously. We covered Slithus on the podcast and you see all this LA history.
Love that.
In Slithus, you see the turtle races, which are still going on today, but I would not condone going to them personally.
Right.
But you see all this LA history. And then when you look at Corman's films, you can see old LA.
Oh, yeah.
In Death Race 2000, I live in Westlake Village.
Okay.
In Death Race 2000, the church from that is in Westlake Village.
I had no idea.
And so I drive by it and I'm oh my God, here's some LA history. This is where they shot it.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I love seeing old LA. I love seeing the marina specifically in Marina Del Rey.
Yes.
And seeing just how much it's changed, how the little beach town is no longer the little beach town.
Absolutely. In Venice too.
Oh my God, Venice,
Corman,
yeah.
I remember watching Bucket of Blood. This is shot in Venice. I can sort of see pieces of it. You see all these great little, bits and almost, it was still the beat generations hanging out there still when Corman was making movies, which is great.
It's funny. You also see LA immortalized in Grand Theft Auto. I'm just going to say. Right. Because the map is squished, but if you know LA well enough, you can know where it's been squished.
Yeah.
And you're I'm driving by this place. And the Venice map is specifically funny because it cuts out right where I had been living in Venice.
Oh my God,
but I was
really?
And it cuts out the traffic circle at Windward Circle.
Yeah, yes.
That's just really, really funny.
Oh my God, that's funny.
So I was driving. I was oh, here's LA. And all my friends, whenever we play Grand Theft Auto, how do you know this? I'm I live here. I live in San Santos.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, Venice is rich with history. Even small towns. I live in Monrovia, two towns over. So when I moved there, I realized, holy crap, a few blocks away, the immortal horror classic 976 Evil was shot on Monrovia. I mean, I remember seeing it when I was in high school. It's not, it's a great film if you like bad horror movies, but it's sort of I was so mesmerized. My God, this is where it was shot. It's that kind of living history that I become an advocate for these places. I try to point them out to people.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's one of the problems with gentrification is that we are kind of bulldozing our history. And it might not be history that people think is oh, this is important, it's in the history book. But these living buildings that have all these living stories that have this energy that is that creative energy is so important because people do come to Los Angeles to chase their dreams. And if you come to LA and you don't see all these same sites that you see that are the reason why you chased your dreams, why are you here? What are we doing? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I go to places, I'm more in places that are lost. I first came out here for a party. I used to work for Details Magazine and we had a big Hollywood issue of my party. And it was Perino's, the old-timey restaurant. It's been a bunch of movies. It's gone. I mean, it's just sort of these things in my recent memory have just have vanished because of, you mentioned it triggered me, it tripped me up. It was because people don't consider it important, but now they may not. But in 20, 30 years, why did we tear that down? Why did we do that to ourselves?
Yeah, and why did we replace it with this monstrosity?
This boxy thing,
I was going to say boxy Minecraft building.
Exactly.
It's funny, there's a few of those that are shut down buildings. I think where they shot the Pulp Fiction diner sequence.
Oh, yeah.
That's that building, correct me if I'm wrong. Sure. Someone's going to correct me. Some person on the internet's going to be I know this because I'm not looking it up. But
right.
I think it's that building near the Academy Museum. You know how that has all those light bulbs that are supposed to be placed in?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That diner. I think that's where they shot it. Mm. And now it's really weird to see there's no light bulbs in that building.
Yeah.
And it just looks like a ghost town. And I brought my friend who had never been to LA before. I'm look at that. They put light bulbs in that building and it used to be all lit up. And he was like, no way. Really? And I was like, yeah.
It's so great to take friends around. I'm taking a friend around in 2 weeks.
Have they ever been here before?
Yes, but never. I'm eager to show them through my eyes. I have a long list in my notes file of film locations, off locations. So it's okay, where are you going to be? I gather a little list of, okay, we hit these places when we're here in this part of town, which is, again, either my psychosis or my me. I'm not sure what it is, my hobby.
No, I think it's great because my number one pet peeve of when people come to LA is when they think that they can go from this side of town to this side of town in 20 minutes.
Exactly.
And oh, we can go do all of these things. And I'm no, you
have
can't.
No idea.
You have no idea the pain and the struggle that I go through in traffic.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like showing people my LA when they come to LA because they always ask what's the fun thing to do? And I'm like, well, there's 100 billion fun things to do. It depends on what you like to do. But if you want to see my LA, I'll show you my LA.
Yes,
it's not going to be what you're going to like see online to
That's a great point, because I think all of us have our own version. Like when a town as big as LA, you carve out your own piece of it. Like to me, like my center of my universe is like, you know, I know where I go and kind of my go-to is like El Coyote and then go to New Bev. Yeah. It's like that thing.
That's
it's
so
like,
funny because mine, right? mine is like New Bev and Toy. Or like New Bev. And then Fred 62's.
Yes.
Yeah, that that's place. Like my other place.
Well, yeah, Vermont. It's like I go, you know, go to the with the Scholiot Books. I mean, usually for me, it's around bookstores. So like if I'm in like Sunset Strip, I don't care about, you know, the rainbow necessarily. I don't care about the whiskey. I'm going to Book Soup.
Yeah, that's like, the thing. It's like that's your LA. Yeah. And that's like where you can show someone, hey, this is why I fell in love with this city. And this is maybe how you'll love this city too.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what... You named Barney's Beanery.
Right.
You named El Coyote. You ever go right at El Coyote, actually?
I have. I, you know, I bring little notebooks. I have these little notebooks. I buy this. My pocket-sized ones. We're just quitting, jotting down quick notes because I don't mind going to the movies by myself, actually. I kind of like it. It's a nice way to unplug. It's like, you know, and then it's not, I love people, love my friends, but sometimes I just want to go and unplug for a while and I'll just do notes at El Coyote.
And there's also some movies I think that are better seen by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. I went to go see Rollerball with someone and I totally regretted it, to be honest. Not regretted seeing it, but just regretted, like, I think I would have had a better experience by myself. And that's no shade to the person I went with.
I hear you.
Sorry. No. But the reason why I was watching, and also like when I went to go see Winter Kills at the Bev.
Yeah.
I was so hyped for that.
It's a weird one.
I had seen it 3 times this year now.
It's and
I
great. Was so hyped. It's a weird one.
But I had a better time at home on my laptop watching that by myself. And I was like, oops.
There is, that's a great point because there is film chemistry. If you like, if you bring someone to a certain movie that they just don't get it and they're a downer, like it's like it kind of, it's a letdown. It's like you're not excited as, you know, whereas when I went from my Scottish writer friend, Al Guthrie, to see Pieces at the New Bev for a midnight show, we were laughing so hard, our sides like hurt. Like we had the best time. It was the crowd was all. It was we were all together laughing and just enjoying the hell out of this movie.
I love that because there are some movies that just like the crowd makes it so much better. When I went to go see Moonstruck, I went with a group of friends.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love Moonstruck. And we saw Raising Arizona first, and then Moonstruck. And I like Raising Arizona. And this showing made me like it more at the Bev because the crowd was so great.
Oh, that's.
But then when I saw Moonstruck, it was like I wanted to sing. Oh, a big pizza pie in the sky. That's amore.
Yeah, exactly.
It was so wonderful.
I mean, it's actually qualifies. New Bev, not to, you know, pimp it too hard. I love the New Bev, but it's like, that's a place too. It's like a place you go and dream with people.
Yeah.
So much like, you know, the crowd mix there is so important.
I love that word that you use, dream, because I really do believe that like when people all go to a movie theater, turn off their cell phones and watch a movie together, we are all like living a dream basically that someone has dreamed up and they've shown it on a movie and they're showing it to us now. So we're all living the same
Absolutely.
Dream.
Absolutely. The same thing is, I love watching movies, you know, on my iPad at home, but... I mean, people ask, why do you go to the theater still? I'm like, because it's all of us. Like, I don't even like, talk to anybody. It's more like just all collectively gasping and like, you know, crying at something or whatever.
And
it's,
I always say even a bad screening is still way better than a screening by yourself at home.
Absolutely.
Because I love it. Like, this is so, so terrible. But I even love it when there's a bad screening, or like a bad crowd, and you go out with your friend, you're like, oh, those people, they were laughing at all the wrong things. And oh my God, like, how can you believe that that person was coughing?
Yeah.
Because you're never going to forget it. It's a really unique experience together. So,
I mean, so many firsts for me at the New Bev that I just sort of, I thank God I saw it there first. You
like,
know?
What movie?
Oh, geez. I mean, I think Model Shop was great. Yeah. He was using that there at first. God, what else did I see there first that I really got? Now, of course, I'm blanking. But what sticks in my memory is actually my first all-nighter at the New Bev. I saw.
Do they even do those anymore?
They not all-nighters. I think they stopped because of pandemic times, and it's a lot. But I think early on, I went to an all-night horror show, which is great. But my first, you know, my proper, well, yeah, that's proper all-night. The Dario Argento all-nighter was amazing because by movies 4 or 5, you're truly hallucinating because like you're in Argento's world. The entire world's like Technicolor. And it's
nothing
like,
exists outside nothing exists, the theater.
Right? The witch is going to eat you. It's like all kinds of crazy stuff. So, I mean, that to me was like one of those great experiences that I just love to drag people to.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you carry around a notebook. Yes. How do you think that writing notes handwritten is different than either typing or putting them in your phone? Like, do you find that it's better to handwrite them?
I do all of them. It's funny you ask that because this summer I started writing a book, just like crime novel for fun, and it refused to like take off on my computer. But I started writing it in this notebook right here, this orange legal pad.
Yeah, the beautiful orange legal pad.
Yeah, I mean, I just started writing notes, and it started from notes to like, oh no, I'm actually writing the actual text. And I just
handwritten.
That's new for me because I am a horrible handwriting is awful, and it's a different. I think it makes you more deliberate in word choice. It slows you down. I talk fast. I'm like, I've just described it as a Scorsese on crack. I just don't, you know, I talk fast. I think fast. And, you know, I type fast and I go back and I endlessly revise. Whereas handwritten notes, I'm taking my time. I'm like thinking, is that the right word? Yeah, okay. And it's not.
And your hand gets tired and like your brain kind of catches up. I just think it's interesting because, but for the podcast, I always tell people that the number one thing I can recommend film students do is write down all the stuff about movies handwritten because it helps my memory recall way more than if I type it up or if I like put it in a notebook.
That's
like,
so true.
Or a note. When I say notebook, I meant notebook on my phone because I do keep notes on my phone.
I do too.
But like when I watch a movie, I type it up and then I go back and I handwrite afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think it really helps my recall.
Like one of my favorite writers is Clive Barker, and he famously writes everything longhand. He writes some long ass novels. I'm impressed by
it. Quentin writes a lot handwritten. Okay. And it's funny that you say like your handwriting because Quentin's handwriting is notoriously sloppy. I can read it because I happen to have that same chicken scratch as him. Okay. So when my dad gets like stuff from Quentin, he's like, Gala, type this up. And I'm like, okay. So I type it up. And then my dad has the typed version so that he can read
it. Now, does your dad do longhand? Or is
my dad also does longhand, but my dad's handwriting is like, very nice. He has writes in all capital letters, like architectural style.
Yeah.
Interesting. His is really interesting. But I've also transcribed my dad's longhand for him. I do a lot of transcribing. I type fast too.
Wow. So are you left or right-handed?
I'm right-handed.
And your dad?
Right-handed.
And Quentin?
I think he's right-handed also.
Ooh, I'm ball out here.
I'm lefty.
Yeah, I'm lefty.
I think, isn't it like 12% of the population is left-handed?
I guess so.
And I think like 80% of left-handed people die doing right-handed activities.
I think so.
Not to be morbid.
Honestly, that's probably how I'll go. I'm probably sure I'll go doing something weird like that. Yeah.
Writing a book with your right hand.
It'll explode or something.
Just like spontaneous combustion.
Well, here's the weird thing, actually. When I'm like standing up on a chalkboard, I'm right-handed.
Oh, interesting.
It's only sitting down. Like I bat right. Everything else is right.
So you're ambidextrous.
Or I'm miswired somehow. I'm not sure. I guess that's a kind word, but I think I'm just weird.
Just a weirdo. But that's exactly. I like weirdos. So.
That's good.
So, okay. So we talked LA places.
Yeah.
There's different places. So you go, you write. Do you ever like see other people doing those same kinds of things that you're doing? Like, do you ever like, oh yeah, you're doing the same.
Oh.
You're also coming here to write. You're also coming here to experience the history.
Sometimes, although usually I really try to stay out of people's way. I don't really, I'm an observer. I watch people, but usually they're mostly doing their own.
Do you eavesdrop?
Not well.
Oh, yeah. I do.
I want to be better and say I don't, but if I tune into interesting conversation, I will tune in just to hear how people talk. I love hearing how people just go back and forth, the shorthand we use and all that fun stuff. I once in a while I'll see people, you know, obviously drawn to us, like Charles Bukowski's apartment is kind of famous and people will go there and check things out. But mostly it's just me, you know, I write a column now for a magazine called Bare Bones, which is the field guide to LA pulp, which is where I choose a writer and tell their story by some of the places they've been. So like David Goodis, he's a Philadelphian like me, but he came out here for like, you know, a bunch of years to work in Hollywood. He wrote the source material for Dark Passage. He tried to do screenplays, didn't do well. He just couldn't figure it out. But I try to track his movements all around town. He was famously just sort of weirdly miserly. He crashed on his friend's couch for years. Like he would refuse to ever rent a place. He would just like crash on the couch, wear the same like shirt and tie, go to bed, get morning, dust himself off, and
That's so pulp. Like,
it's
just
so
to be
pulp.
Honest, that is incredibly pulp. If anyone wants to be pulp, I guess.
Exactly.
Do that.
And then tracking down where that was hard because he lived on Eleanor Avenue. It's behind Santa Monica, right near, not too far from like Hollywood Forever Cemetery and Paramount. Mm-hmm. But it was almost like when I do these columns, like detective work. I'm trying to figure out, okay, I know this street he was here, but who lived where? And it's like, that piecework is the mania I have.
I love that though, because like doing the detective work is almost like you are writing the true history of something, but you're kind of also writing your own like detective story while you're doing it. Like I'm unfolding this. I am the detective and I
I
love that.
I mean, I remember the first column I wrote, I went to during the pandemic to find out where Armitage Trail, who wrote Scarface, he was the first guy, the novel. He was like, he lived hard, died really young. Like he was like 30 and he died of a heart attack in the theater.
That makes that kind of makes sense then about the Scarface guy.
Yeah, exactly. But I went to see he's famous. He was buried at Hollywood Forever in a vault. I went to see it and he was missing. His body's missing. And later I learned that he's actually reburied with his brother across town, another cemetery. So it was like,
so his body was missing.
Yeah. I mean, who stole Armitage Trail? Was it Al Capone angry that he took his body? But those kind of things make my day. I just finished a column where I was tracing Charlie Siringo, a cowboy detective author guy in the 20s. Wow. There was a cowboy bar on Cahuenga in the 20s called The Watering Hole. Now, that was unofficial. Tracking that down took some work because it was like, where was this damn place? And eventually I realized that, okay, it was tied to this guy who made saddles. It was a saddlery.
It was a saddle? Wow.
And it turned to, you know, because it's prohibition. So it was like they would have, bring their whiskey in there and just chat. And at one time, you can drive down Cahuenga and see all these like cowboys, real and Hollywood cowboys, hoping to be called as extras in films. Before Gower Gulch, this is. This is like before Gower Gulch, in the 20s, it was The Watering Hole in Cahuenga.
Wow. So how did you do this research? Like, did you use like libraries? Did you use...
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing is newspapers.com. It's like a sort of all the archives.
Yeah.
All the LA papers just go through, and it's a bit of a, it's like a needle in a haystack search. Sometimes they do a search term, not quite right. You look for a time, you know, and you find things eventually, which is kind of great.
Now, what do you think though about all the newspapers that maybe aren't archived?
Oh, it breaks
That's
my heart.
That's a question. I was just talking with someone about that, all the magazines that aren't archived, yeah, and all the stories that are in these magazines.
Yeah.
So it's like, you got to hunt down the actual newspaper.
What worries me is that, you know, generations from now, when people are trying do research on our generation, roughly our generation, and you know, blogs are gone. The internet is erased.
The blogs are digital. Gone. The forums are gone.
All this stuff.
Yeah, we were just talking.
Podcasts hopefully are preserved. You know,
well, that's the thing, is that we hope podcasts are preserved. But I was just talking with someone who was talking about Brett Easton Ellis' podcast, but before he had his podcast, there were like 10 episodes and they're just completely gone from the internet.
Oh.
And he had remembered hearing a story on one of them.
Yeah.
And so he ended up finding it on an iPod. Which was amazing.
That's incredible.
But he's like, I might be the only one that has this now. Like, what do I do with this?
Well, that worries me as a you know, amateur historian. Like, I love that, you know, newspapers, you can find them somewhere. You can actually track things down, you know, slowly. Or like even on eBay, find a magazine or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, this last 20 years has been, you know,
the digital stuff just goes away.
Right.
That's the weirdest thing. And then also you just forget that it's like, and when everything is available at your fingertips, you start to forget like when it isn't.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's just, it's a really weird feeling.
I mean, we're in an office here surrounded by books. I just love having books around me because I know I can open a page and find that thing and not worry that my Wi-Fi is down or anything else.
Okay. I love book smell. I don't know if you love book smell,
but
it's like the one thing I wish, like, the internet sprayed book smell at me. It's like one of the best
old book smell, new, all of it, all of the above, right?
For me, it also, it's like telling a history and a story of whoever had the book before me.
Oh yeah.
Because it's like, was this person a smoker? Like, do I smell cigarettes on it?
Yeah.
Like, is there a little bit of mildew?
Yeah.
Are the pages like all dog-eared? Is it well-worn?
Some notes even. I found receipts for things, which I love.
Yeah.
You see, I love when I find a receipt. It's like where the book was purchased, how much it was, what the tax was, what else they bought. It's like, you know, going back to the 50s, I've seen like, wow, this book was 25 cents on this
printer
rack.
How do you feel about people like that do write annotations in their books? Because I actually like getting books annotated, or like VHS tapes that have stickers on them and stuff. Some people don't like that. They like to have a pristine version when they buy it.
No, I love it. I mean, if it's like, you know, someone... A kid with a crayon went nuts. That's a little annoying, but
well, because that's without intention.
Right.
But someone that's like writing notes, or maybe they wrote like to my dearest,
heartbreaking.
I love getting those because one, it is heartbreaking, but then two, if you have several books from the same collection or person, then like you start a little story gets formed.
That's true.
We found one actually about my great great grandma that it turned out that she was secretly a lesbian.
That's amazing.
And we found it through the book, thank you. Like, they had given books back and forth, and it was like to her friend. But like, as you read more of them, you kind of realized they were like having a romance.
So you inherited this collection.
So we inherited this collection and pieced it together that like she secretly was having like a schoolgirl romance.
That's incredible.
And it was a beautiful thing, and I just loved it. But some people don't want to have anything in their books.
Yeah, what a gift that is.
That's history also.
Yeah, what a gift that is.
It's like, my history. It's weird.
It's super important. Like, I mean, family history is not often told, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that story obviously didn't come down to you through the generations.
No.
So like that you found it through the books, that's magical.
And we actually called my grandfather to tell him. And he was like, what? Really?
That's incredible. What I'm actually working on now is a very research intensive true crime memoir right now. And it's like my own family history to a degree, because my family history intersected with a mob story, a mobster.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in Philly in the 20s. So like, but this is a story that's never been told in my family. It's like, I had to kind of find it myself and then kind of dig into it. And the more I dig, the more I found little pieces of like real ephemera. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually have a trading card of the mobster who killed the mobster who killed my relative.
Oh my God. Yeah. So you have it. It's like it's six degrees of separation.
It's been right there. I have this like, it's touching. Like I have a little ashtray up there with police uniform buttons. I probably sound crazy, but I do want to touch these things.
Tactile. You feel the energy from it.
Surely do. It makes it real. Like, because honestly, when you're writing, you're trying to conjure something out of, nothing, thin air.
Pull it from the ether.
Yeah. And if anything that tangible for me is like, okay, I grab hold of something, especially historical things. I want, if I can touch it, look at it, breathe in that smell of a place, that's so huge.
Do you come up with the title of your book before or after you start writing it?
That's a great question. It's half and half, honestly. If I have a good title, I'm golden. I'm happy. It's like I'm doing cartwheels. Like, I got it. Like, because I'm making progress now. I have a title for it, and like, I love it. Other ones are an agonizing killer. you struggle so hard to
you
find the right title.
You have this great story, and it's like, where's my title?
And it's like, all the titles are like, no, it's wrong. It's wrong. It doesn't work. And it's going
to
be an ordeal.
When you're struggling to find a title, how do you do it?
Boy, I really take a breather, step back, and think, okay, just let it come to me. Like, is there any images or words? Like, kind of, a title, it has to do a lot of things. It has to carry meaning. It has to appeal to a reader. Because, some books is like, that doesn't sound good, based on the title.
And the cover art. The cover art, super important. Do you have, like, a favorite pulp cover?
Oh, God.
That was one of my questions I wanted to ask you. But I was like, that's like, going to, like, rip his hair out.
Yeah, and I have so many. I mean, I can pull off the shelf randomly here. I think the Hard-Boiled lineup. This is an anthology of Hard-Boiled stories. It's, like, dudes on a lineup with this
hot chick. Does she have a shotgun?
Exactly.
Oh, I love it.
It's a hot blonde with a bikini top and a shotgun.
And look at the back of it, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, and she's there, doing something,
With a different gun. With a different lineup.
She has a busy day. She's, like, obviously busy, so I lost.
She's going around her Los Angeles.
Exactly. A lot of dudes to take out. So, I mean, having a favorite ancestors. They're all my favorites.
Our favorite movie?
Favorite movie of all time.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, that's easy. It's RoboCop.
Oh. Ooh. You didn't even get saved by the bell. I'm glad it's RoboCop. To be honest, I'm really glad that I asked you that question and you had an answer, because some people, they're like, I don't know if I have a favorite movie. And I'm like, come on, pick it.
To me, it's a perfect marriage of like, it's satire, it's violent, it's funny as hell. It's like, to me, it's the perfect movie.
And that's all the time that we have for today. Dwayne, is there any final thought that you'd like to leave listeners with?
Oh, just go out and explore wherever you are. If you're not lucky enough to live in LA, like Gala and I, go explore your city. There's always interesting history everywhere. If you look hard enough, you're going to find the most amazing stories.
That's it for today. Thank you so much to my guest, Dwayne Swierczynski. You can find him on Instagram at SWIERCZY or on his website, gleefulmayhem.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Gala.
I'm Gala Avery, and this has been The Gala Show. The Gala Show is brought to you by Insert-O-Matic. This episode was executive produced by Roger Avery and produced by Gala Avery. Music composed by Andy Milburn. As always, I'm your host, Gala Avery. Copyright 2023, all rights reserved. Despite me sharing the same last name with this charity, I don't have any affiliation with it, besides the fact the issue is very near and dear to my heart. Did you know that in the United States, 2.7 million children currently have a parent in prison, and it's estimated that 10 million children have experienced parental incarceration at some point in their lives? I was one of these kids, and as an adult, I am really grateful to be able to give back to Project Avery. Their mission is to build leadership from within by supporting community through programs such as mentoring and outdoor education, and also to remove the stigma surrounding having a parent that's incarcerated. You don't have to feel alone. If you know a kid who could use these resources or would like to donate money or time to the charity, please go to Project Avery, that's AVARY.org, to check out what this amazing charity is all about. Again, that's ProjectAvery.org. Thank you guys, from the bottom of my heart.